This is Speaking of Events, the podcast for event industry leaders. We bring together innovators, strategic rock stars, and visionary creatives to talk all about events, industry trends, and anything in between. And speaking of events, here is your host, Carrie Garbus.
Back in 2019, it was my goal to have a meal, a sit-down in-person, face-to-face meal with every single person in my company. And at the time, we were this similar, very similar size to what we are today. It was around 23 people that were located all over North America. So I was scheduling all these short trips and having lots of good food and conversation. And one that I was really excited about was to get a chance to sit down with our trainer, who our Quebecois English speaking trainer, who is based in Montreal. So I finally get to go up to I had been to Montreal once before. It was a while ago. And I wanted to go and sit down with her and have some of the famous smoked meat and get one-on-one time. And being in Montreal, I also got bonus time with my niece, Shira Garbus, who at the time was a freshman at McGill. So I get up super early. I get a flight from Boston to Montreal. It's early April. It's literally exactly around this time of year back in 2019. And I fly up in like a sweater dress, these like light little cute boots, and a teeny tiny shoulder bag that had some fresh clothes to change into and a little makeup. And that was about it, because it was just a quick overnight. And I get there, I have this amazing lunch. I get the smoked meat with Patricia. It was a lovely meal. And during lunch, little unbeknownst to me, I walk outside and it's like a rip roaring snowstorm. Something had blown in. It's early April. I'm like, okay, well now what am I going to do? I'm totally underdressed for this weather. And I'm going to get like a walking tour of McGill and walk around Montreal. So what does any good, smart human do? I go shopping. I buy boots. I get to go to Roots, which is super exciting for me. I fell in love with Roots as a kid when I went to camp with lots of Canadian kids, and there was lots of exchanges of Gap gear from the US kids and Roots gear from the Canadian kids. And because I never had the luxury of having like big branded stuff, I never got to trade much clothing, although I did get a few Roots t-shirts from some good friends. Anyway, I get boots and Roots and all sorts of stuff. I end up having a great tour of McGill, dinner at Gibby's Steakhouse in Montreal, which by the way is like in an 18th century stable. All good, great night with Shira. I get up super early. I get on my plane to go home back to Boston, and the flight attendant on the teeny tiny Air Canada flight is the same flight attendant that had helped see me the day before. And I walk on and he sees me now with this gigantic bag, because I had to purchase a duffel bag to fly home with. He was like, oh, you did a little Canadian shopping, did you? And I did. I found Montreal to be so warm and welcoming, not necessarily temperature warm, people warm and welcoming once, and it was warm once I had the right clothes, and delicious. So I am thrilled to have not only a McGill graduate, but a Montreal resident. Is that correct, right?
That is correct.
That is correct. Mm-hmm. And as my guest today on Speaking of Events. So welcome. Please help me warm, no matter what the temperature. Welcome is Liam Martin. He is the co-organizer of the Running Remote Conference, which by the way, is the world's largest conference on building and scaling remote teams, which we're going to dive into. And also the author of the upcoming book, Running Remote, right? Remote. Yes. Running Remote. Yes. Excellent. Welcome, Liam, to Speaking of Events.
Yeah, thank you very much. I have one question for you.
Yes.
Did you go to Schwartz's or did you go to the Maine for your smoked meat?
We did not go to Schwartz's. We went to, and I just looked it up this morning. It was the sit-down one that kind of looks like a diner with lots of lights inside.
The Maine.
The Maine.
Good move. Yeah, so okay. Everyone goes to Schwartz's. They're across the street from each other. Schwartz's is really the place that invented smoked meat.
Yes.
But the secret is that it's not very good anymore. There's no more Schwartz's that are running the business. The thing that is kind of funny is Celine Dion bought Schwartz's about 20 years ago, and she's operated it ever since, very quietly in the background. The unofficial queen of Quebec, by the way, is Celine Dion. You should not speak badly about Celine to any Quebecer, or you will possibly get shanked, to be completely honest with you. And then the Maine is definitely a lower key place. I think the Maine's 110 years old, and I think Schwartz's is like 150 years old. But much better smoked meat. If you're a local, you'll go to the Maine. You just won't be in line for 45 minutes for Schwartz's. You'll get the good stuff.
Yes, that's thus Patricia, the Montreal-based trainer, took me to the Maine. I do want to speak of Celine, as you say, because we here mostly say Celine, and that Celine is way more attractive. Thank you. Is that I have had the luxury of being close to her once in person, and her physique does not represent somebody who is the curator of smoked meat. All I'm saying is that she really was extremely skinny. I'm holding up a pen. Wow. If you can't, she was so skinny. There is no way you've told me this woman runs, if I didn't know who it was, and you said, well, she runs this most famous smoked meat shop in Montreal, I'd be like, that is a lie, because no.
There's a very interesting, so I had a buddy of mine, he wrote, Trust Me, I'm Lying. And I can't remember the name of the author. Anyways, I had a dinner with him a couple of years ago, and he had this really interesting concept, which was Ryan Holiday is his name. And he had this concept that he said, the longer an institution exists, the higher its value. So an organization like Schwartz's, if you can just keep, and he specifically touched on restaurants, the longer a restaurant stays in business, the higher its value, because the brand actually accounts for way more than the restaurant itself. So you know that you're going to have so many tourists that are going to walk into Schwartz's, whether the food is good or bad, it doesn't really matter, which is a very interesting phenomenon. And there's actually a place right up the street from Schwartz's called, it's a steakhouse that had been in operation for 200 years. It's one of the oldest steakhouses in the world. And it went out of business during COVID, unfortunately.
However, it Kibbe's? Is that where I went to?
No, it wasn't that place. The name escapes me right now. I've been there a few times. But the crazy thing is that they have five or six different products that they sell in Canadian grocery stores all over Canada, and people continuously buy them. So the actual restaurant no longer exists, but the products that they sell inside of these grocery stores are doing millions and millions of dollars in turnover, way more profitable than the restaurant itself. It's a very interesting thing, which is brands in the world in which, you know, we are kind of building mini brands, and we're seeing how they evolve and all that kind of stuff. Really, the value is in the brand, and the actual institution itself sometimes doesn't really matter. It's just, can you own Radio Shack? Can you own Schwartz's? If you can, you're going to have a long-term successful business.
That is true.
Yeah. But anyways, we're here to talk about events.
Are not we, about speaking of Schwartz's, that's what I'll just, that it'll just be renamed. The podcast will just be renamed. Speaking of Schwartz's, speaking of smoked meats. Yeah, I guess we should move on to events, I suppose.
Sure.
And Liam, what is the one thing you wished more people knew about events?
Oh boy. Well, so I think, you know what? I'm going to change my answer based off of what I thought about before. Events for me, and I've been running an event for 5 years throughout COVID, of which we had to completely transform the way that event marketing and just kind of the way that you monetize events operate. I would probably say they're actually easier to start than most people recognize. And I think everyone looks at it as a huge mountain to climb, when in reality, you can actually do it in a much more agile way, much more like the way that tech startups operate, their companies, as opposed to the behemoth waterfall method that I think a lot of people think they need to be when you run an event.
Wow. Yeah.
So I'll give you an example. 5 years ago, we started the Running Remote Conference. We all had our team retreat in one particular place. You fly out to meet people. I fly everyone to one particular place. And then we just meet in that one location. It's kind of like a conference about the company. And we run it actually almost exactly the same way. So we have a production team and all that kind of stuff to be able to make sure that everything is humming perfectly. We even have a producer with a rundown as well for those events. So they're pretty intense. And we ended up sitting one evening and we said, well, you know, we have employees in 43 different countries all over the world. And we really want to be able to get from 150 people to 300 people to 500 people to 1,000 people. How do we do that working remotely? So we started Googling things. And there was a whole bunch of people that wrote about hiring a virtual assistant. There was a whole bunch of information about being a digital nomad, but there was no information about actually building and scaling a remote team like a big company. And I had a ready, fire, aim philosophy. So I don't know if you know Pareto's principle, but effectively the work of a task expands into the time you have to complete it. So if you take a 1 month, if you say, I'm going to run a conference in 1 month, or I'm going to run a conference in 6 months, generally, if you had two separate groups of people, if you have 100 people doing it 1 month and 100 people do it in 6 months, the general results are not going to vary that much. There's going to be about a 5% variation in the quality of those events. So it's much better and faster to be able to say, book a venue in 4 months, which is what we did. And now I have a contractual obligation where I spent $100,000 on a venue and I need to be able to fill it up, right? So then all of those things self-assembled into that boulder that I put out in front of me. So that's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about agile development. We said, let's put something together in 4 months. If we can break even on it, that will be amazing. We actually did break even and I think we made a little bit of money in that first one. Classically, wow. It's always you lose money on your first one, you break even on your second one, and you make money on your third one. And we broke even on that one, made a little bit of money, and we had a fantastic time. And then we really pulled into one of the other core issues that I had starting that event, which was quite possibly no one actually wanted to learn any of this stuff. And we just had to run a conference to be able to test that assumption.
And
it was successful.
They did right.
Exactly. Right, yeah. So, exactly. So I, whenever I look at running a new business, one of the things that I look at is what assumption are you making from your conclusions? Mm. So if you think about that strategically, that's the last part of the critical thinking process, the formalized critical thinking process.
Yeah.
So why has there not been a conference like this before? That's a question that you need to ask yourself, right? So we asked ourselves that question and we found out that there were three conferences that had existed before and they all failed, which was not a good, you know, was not something to support our thesis that we should proceed with this plan. But we actually discovered inside of those three examples, one was a very small group of people. So like a mastermind of under 50 people, which is a different type of approach. The other one was approaching a big enterprise segment of the market. So a group that, you know, like Microsoft and IBM and Dell and Google would really only be interested in going to, and not the demographic that we were approaching, which was effectively tech bros of remotely friendly companies, people that had more than 50 employees, but were really interested in building and scaling remotely. And we found that there was almost like a kind of fundamentalist fervor around these individuals. They were incredibly passionate about building and scaling remote teams. And I am admittedly one of them as well. So it was perfect for me to be able to understand that. And that was that little avenue that we were able to build some traction in and scale it to where it is today.
What year was this? Was this 2017, 2016? What?
This was 2017, I believe. Yeah.
In my slice of experience, I think the world was ready for this. I've had Ovations 10 years old, as you, I shared with you. And in the very couple early days, maybe year one, maybe into year two, having a remote, we're a remote company and always have been, and having a remote company was something not always at the first piece of information that you gave people. Because many times, especially as I was pitching much larger companies, they'd say, well, where is your office?
Right.
And it felt a little like, we're remote, or we're a virtual company. Everybody works from home. And I remember not being comfortable sharing that early on. And then it sort of came into fashion of like, oh, you're ahead of the game. You're smart. Of course, this makes sense. You don't need a physical space. I did have some pushback every once in a while. And now, of course, I'm on trend with everybody. So,
you know, what's hilarious, which totally brings this conversation 360. So our current event, we had gotten a room block from, well, I'm not going to tell you the room block that I got the company from. You have to come to the conference if you want to figure out the hotel, and I don't want to badmouth them. But so got this room block from a hotel in Montreal, and they got very anxious with us because they discovered that our corporate headquarters was a PO box in Las Vegas, in Nevada. And they said, well, where does this company exist? And I sat down and explained to them, this conference is called Running Remote. It's about remote companies. We don't have an office. Come on, guys. Like, you were, they were almost going to pull our room block on us because they didn't believe that we were a legitimate company.
Right.
And it's just that perception still exists in 2022, which is insane.
No, really, after what we've just been through as a world?
Well, yeah, that was this hotel that happened to me a month and a half ago. So it's really crazy that people still have that perception that if you don't have an office, you are not important or you are not big. The fastest growing companies in the world right now are remote.
Yes.
Case in point, Shopify, $207 billion valuation, remote. Coinbase, $141 billion valuation, remote. GitLab, $17 billion valuation. They just went IPO 3 months ago, remote. These companies are the companies that are really going to build up the bulk of the S&P 500 when you look at the next 5 to 10 years. And people that don't recognize that remote work is just not a nice to have, but it's actually going to be a requirement for you to be able to operate your business, they're going to get very quickly left behind.
Oh, I agree with you. Absolutely. So speaking of remote teams,
sure,
of which we both have them, as do many others now. So what is the one thing you wish more people knew about running a remote team?
Ah, well, that one is actually the subject of the book that I've spent the last year and a half hiding away from. So when people ask me questions about running a remote team, here's the stereotypical questions that I'll get. And if you're listening right now, let me know if you're part of those questions. Should I be using Slack or Google or Microsoft Teams? Should I be using Zoom or Google Meet? Should I be using Asana or Trello? And the problem is that if those are the questions that you think you should be asking, you don't actually know the answers that you're supposed to be looking for. So you're looking for the wrong information, which is fundamentally, remote teams don't just want to have the office recreated at home. They have to actually be managed in a different way. So as I was studying over a dozen billion-dollar plus remote first companies for researching this book, I found that they all held one single thing in common, which is what I call asynchronous management. And it's effectively the ability to be able to manage people without actually interacting with them face-to-face or through video calls. So there's no synchronous communication inside of those organizations. I know that that sounds pretty weird, but as an example, Vaishali, who's the person that ended up connecting us for this podcast.
Yes.
She's worked for me for 6 years. And during that time, we have met face-to-face or on video 5 times. That's it. Everything else, we've communicated through email, through our project management systems, through our mm-hmm. Slack systems, you know, we don't actually communicate synchronously. And what a lot of these remote first companies discovered was, number one, this was actually a barrier to them. So 15 years ago, we didn't actually have Zoom or Slack or any of these tools that we currently have today that basically makes up for synchronous communication. So instead, they had to actually build a business without being able to do that. But the advantage is that every single individual inside of the organization has built processes and systems and platforms to be able to be autonomous nodes inside of an organization. So they choose what they want to do based off of what their managers are telling them to do. And then they choose how to go from A to B, as opposed to being told how to go from A to B. This is a little bit of a different way of working, but once you can actually build that out, the advantage is that the platform actually becomes the manager and not necessarily individuals inside of that organization, which allow you to scale like Coinbase, Shopify, GitLab, and all the other companies that I just mentioned.
So interesting. And so how important is it for us to have some real face-to-face human interaction in between? I mean, you think it's important. You're having an in-person event for an industry called that is running remote. Yep. So I think you see some value in it. I'm doing things, albeit a couple of years ago, was getting on a plane and going to 20 different cities to sit down and have meals with everybody that worked for us. Mm-hmm. So, and look at how voraciously people are returning to live in-person events to connect. So where's the balance there?
So the difference is when I meet with the team synchronously, I don't talk about what the vast majority of companies that I lovingly call pandemic panickers talk about when they meet with their remote staff. So generally, when you meet with your remote staff, you say, well, how are your numbers this week? Or, you know, I give you my metrics, you give your manager my metrics, and then that manager gives the boss my metrics.
Right.
Inside of remote first organizations, every single individual should theoretically have the same informational advantage as the CEO of the company. So everything is open. It's a policy or a culture of radical transparency inside of the organization that allows for everyone to have that information. So I actually don't have to discuss what your metrics are, because your metrics are either submitted by you every single week inside of some project management system, or even better, in the vast majority of cases, it's automated. So right. We don't have to actually discuss those. That's not what we should spend our precious half hour working on. What we should instead talk about is, how are you? What problems can I solve for you this week, month, or quarter? And it's almost always not, oh, well, I really need to be able to understand this particular issue as it applies to my metrics. It's almost always, hey, my dog died last week and my kids are having a really tough time of it. Okay, well, listen, why don't I get a psychologist for you to be able to come in and try to help with your kids? Maybe that would get you an extra 2 hours a day back that you're investing in dealing with this other issue. Yeah. Or I'm having a real serious conflict with one of my other team members inside of the organization, and we're just not coming to a conclusion. And there's some emotional issues that are being brought up there. Great. You know what? I'll come in as a third party and we can really break this down and discuss it synchronously. That's leadership versus management. And remote first organizations are full of leaders, but they don't have many managers. In reality, actually, when I've studied these companies, I found that on average, their managerial layer is about 50% thinner than their on-premise in-office counterparts, which is a really interesting phenomenon and effectively means there are more workers working on hard problems inside of asynchronous companies than there are people that are managing people working on hard problems. And that means you obviously innovate faster and you build your company faster.
This is so inspiring to me as the leader of a remote company, and very much what I strive towards, that putting enough processes in place that I feel that the structure gives freedom. Like an improv actor has very specific structures that we follow, and it allows for the most freedom and the most creative stuff to happen. I have two questions. Are you willing to share what platform you use for project management?
Yes. So we use a multitude of project management systems. The biggest one is Asana. And again, mm-hmm. when I talk about projects and tools, I really want to reinforce that it's not about the tools that you use. It's about the actual methodologies that you implement to be able to deploy those tools. Because whenever I do a presentation, it's always, the phones always come out when I start talking about the tools. It's not about the tools. It's about actually how you use them, which is important. But we use Asana. I would say Trello is another really great project management tool if you want to start off completely for free. Basecamp is another really good one. We use Basecamp for a lot of our long form debates about a particular issue. So if we need to be able to say, hey, we're going to build this new feature inside of our software company, we'll have long debates about that. And it kind of gives us a leading memo that we can discuss. And we can consume that information, by the way, when we choose to, as opposed to having a synchronous meeting in which we have to disrupt our other workflow in order to actually consume that information. Yep. That's the critical advantage of asynchronous work and management. And then we use Jira for our project management inside of our development teams. And a couple other tools that, you know, we use BuzzStream, we use Time Doctor, which is our time tracking tool for remote teams. And again, it's just really focusing on that technology stack and saying, mm-hmm. how can we account for all of the metrics inside of an organization and effectively let the platform be the manager and not necessarily the individual? There is no place inside of an asynchronous company, or at least you as the leader of an asynchronous company, should be continuously trying to figure out how can I automate all of these systems so that there's no single human being responsible for, you know, putting information into a spreadsheet, as an example.
Right. Yep, absolutely. Oh, thank you for sharing that. We use Basecamp internally, a couple of the other things you mentioned as well. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of my entrepreneur colleagues love Trello. That is something that they've truly
and embraced. It's free
and we'll, and, right, to start and off we'll with. Use that, right. And we use that for kind of specific one-off projects, but our main internal stuff is, or all projects wide across company is Basecamp. My second question is, the book is dropping, and is that, that's an album term. The book is emerging its life in August. Is that correct?
Yes. August 16th is when it is quote unquote dropping.
That's not what they say about a book.
I'm a nerd, so that sounded really, really weird. Okay. But yeah, that's when it's dropping. My album's coming out August 16th.
Right. Maybe I just say that because I've recorded albums as well as had a published book, and I just use the term dropping. And I say that for the podcast, like this episode will drop on, I don't even know if that's perfect. Still a thing. So yeah. We'll, I don't know. And I'm going to find out when my weight is dropping. That's really the only date I care about. Back to events just a bit. We talked about what I do, what my company does. And so I always love to hear, if you're willing to share, a speaker disaster story. Makes me feel better about my world and what I do. So come on, Liam,
yeah,
make
so
me
I
feel
have a
little
couple.
Better.
I can tell you, I had the co-founder of GitLab and who has run a $17 billion recently IPO'd company. And we had him speak at the conference, and his slides were in Google Slides format, and it didn't actually end up working with the formatting of the screen. So it was a complete disaster, and he actually had to restart his presentation, which I felt very bad about. We've also run a couple events in Bali in Indonesia, and we had an issue where, because there was higher levels of humidity, working with a particular HDMI bridge that was a consumer HDMI bridge for our projector, in all of our pre-production and our stage build and all that kind of stuff, everything was working smoothly. But then when we actually started the presentation and started the conference, the screen would pop in and out every 45 seconds. And it was incredibly disruptive for everybody. And we had a really good production manager that literally, I mean, this guy is like, who's that pirate? He's like Johnny Depp. Johnny Depp
right.
played this pirate
that guy.
Right. He has like tattoos all over his face. And, you know, he's got chains everywhere. And he kind of just sat back and he's like, listen, guys, we're screwed until the next break. Like, we can't fix any of this stuff. So do you want me to disconnect everything and work on it for 15 minutes or just roll with it? And we rolled with it. And it was what it was. But that was incredibly frustrating. And then actually one other one, which was hilarious, was we had and this is something that Igor, who is really the CEO and manager of the Running Remote Conference, he had this issue where there was a generator that was running next to our event. And it was this other company that was running this generator, and the hotel didn't want them to run this generator, and we didn't want them to run the generator, but they were going to run it anyways. And in, I will call it kind of like Ukrainian Russian style, he went out there with an axe and cut the line of the generator, and said, problem solved. And he just went back in because it was creating a lot of background noise for the video crew. And then we paid them $500 to fix the line that they were running. So those are a couple examples of things going really, really wrong. And explosions will happen. And I think the reality is that if you think that they're not, then you actually aren't preparing for them to happen. So this is, at least for me, in my short experience as a conference organizer, you have to actually assume that things are going to go wrong. And we actually have a B team that's kind of like a Johnny on the spot. It's usually me and one other person. And our job is just to be able to fill those gaps as quickly as humanly possible throughout the event, because things will go wrong. There will be a video crew that gets sick. There will be, you know, people that end up, there'll be an AV group that falls apart. There will be a speaker that just says, I don't want to do a talk today. And you have to jump in to be able to figure those things out.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so smart. We're often brought in kind of as the stopgaps to deal with the speakers, to ideally get anybody who says we don't want to speak, to get them bubbly and ready and optimistic enough to go speak. Right. So smart. What is the number one thing you wish speakers did?
Oh man. Well, submit their slides on time. That would be a big help.
good luck with that one.
Yes. But you know, it's interesting because you can look at the professional speakers versus the operators inside of organizations. So I'll give you an example. The chief innovation officer at Jira, actually, he spoke at our conference, and I had very nicely been emailing him over 3 weeks saying, hey, where are your slides? Where are your slides? And the day before he shows up, he's like, so what do you think I should talk about? And I'm like, are you kidding me, buddy? What do you mean? You should be ready. And he went up there and killed it, just knocked it out of the park, because he's doing 6 or 7 a month, right? That's his job. And so you need to be able to, adapt to those different types of situations, to be completely honest with you. But outside of, you know, speakers preparing their slides, I would say it's really just preparation. If you are not in that category, I would highly suggest you actually get some speaker training. It's not as expensive as you would think. Exactly. At Ovation would be a perfect example of that, because the ability to be able to address an audience, even in just your tonality, the speed at which you speak, are you speaking too quickly? Are you speaking not fast enough? Are you pausing in the right moments? This is kind of the thing that takes an okay talk that's just factual to something that everyone will remember. And it doesn't require that much training to be able to get to that point, particularly even if you've never given a talk before. I think spending 2 to 3 hours with someone that knows what they're talking about in that context can be absolutely monumental for your overall delivery.
Well, I could not agree with you more on that one. Thank you very much. That's a nice little extra plug. When and where is the Running Remote Conference?
So it is May 17th to 18th in Montreal, Canada. And we
get some smoked meats. You can get some.
You can get some smoked meats. And it's actually running at a place called New City Gas, which is one of the oldest buildings in the city, and actually in North America. And it's an old smelting plant. So it's a very cool environment. One of the other pieces that we put together is we have a mission statement, and we have our, we have what we stand for as a company, and we really make sure that we abide by that. And one of those things inside of the Running Remote mission statement is we only do events out of one of one environments. So you will never see our conference run at a Howard Johnson's. You will never see it. If you could go into the building and you didn't know which building you were in, if it looked like any other building across North America or Europe, then we failed in our job to be able to deliver a unique experience to our attendees. And that's absolutely critical. It's very expensive for us to be able to do that, but effectively the venue actually becomes a character in the conference as well, which I think is really important when differentiating yourself from everyone else that's in the space. I mean, no one wants to go to another boring corporate conference, I think. They want to be able to go to something fun. And we add a little bit of fun, but we put it inside of a corporate envelope.
Where can we find out more information? Where can we send people who are would be a good fit to go to the conference? Oh, and tell me who's a good fit to go to the conference.
So if you are interested in building and scaling a remote team, if you failed at building a remote team, but actually want to find out why, then this is definitely the conference for you. Some other people that shouldn't go, by the way, because I think it's important to be able to say who shouldn't attend as opposed to who should.
Yes.
If you're an employee, you should not attend the conference. If you're a digital nomad, you should not attend the conference. Effectively, if you are anyone that's really not necessarily focused on taking remote teams seriously, of course, you should also not attend the conference. I think it's really important. And again, if you're listening to this and you're setting up your conference, forget about who should come, focus on who shouldn't, and actually the rest will figure itself out. Because then you can specifically point out to people. And it's funny because every single year we have digital nomads that come to the conference and I've tried to refund their money. And some of these people say, no, I really want to come. I really want to come. And then they're disappointed at the end of the conference. And I was like, well, I told you that it was not about, you know, working from a laptop anywhere on planet Earth. It's actually about building and scaling remote teams. It's important to figure out who your customer is not. It's really going to be a fantastic focusing point on who it is. But if you want to find out more about the conference, go to runningremote.com. All of our details are there. And then if you want to actually check out all the talks, we also post them for free up on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/runningremote. So if you can't afford a ticket to the conference, go to the YouTube channel.
Oh, love that. Thank you. So does the gentleman who's an expert on running remote have anything to say about hybrid events by any chance?
I think they're going to go through a really interesting transition phase. So we are running a hybrid event. And as of this point, I would probably say I'm undecided as to whether or not we'll do another one next year. So I'm very sure that we'll do an in-person. When we were running completely virtual, we would be able to get okay levels for sponsorship, but the cost for sponsorship went up 5x. When we went to in-person. So someone that was willing to pay us $5,000 for a gold spot, as an example, is now willing to pay us $25,000 for that exact same spot for in-person. Yeah. So they really are looking to be able to build those in-person relationships. And I think that that is critical when you think about someone that wants to sell $100,000 worth of software to someone or a product or service. But I think there's also a big component, and we have had hundreds of emails from people saying, it kind of just boils into two categories. And for people that are thinking about starting a conference over the next 6 months, you need to think about this. Half the category of people are saying, hey, there better be COVID passports and masks. And the other 50% are saying, no masks and no COVID passports, please. So unfortunately, it's a very political decision that's currently being made. What we are doing is we're saying we are following the government mandates on it. I also had to, like, my liability insurance 11x'd it was a very, very expensive to really kind of get liability insurance that's going to cover you for something like COVID. It's incredibly expensive to be able to do it. But those are costs that unfortunately we need to accrue in order to be able to make events successful, at least I would say over the next 6 to 12 months as we completely move to an endemic phase. So it's really important for you guys to be able to pay attention to that. Those things are going to be coming down the line, and you need to actually have a very good plan for both of those groups of people. We actually are going to be running, and I think I got this from someone in the last couple of weeks. I've picked it up, which is the green, yellow, red, stickers on people's
or the bracelets. Yes.
Yeah. So green is, hey, come up and kiss me and lick me. No problem.
Hug it out. Right.
Right.
Lick me. And, yes.
And you know, yellow is, hey, you know, maybe you should ask before. And then red is, don't want to be close to people. And I think that's a really good system to use to be able to at least bridge ourselves through the next 6 to 12 months before hopefully events go back to the real normal. So my perception would be hybrid will continue to be a part of your conference package, but I also think we're probably going to keep it in place just to be able to provide people a really fantastic piece of value after the conference is over. So people that go in for a physical conference, they'll very easily pay an extra $100 for, you know, the digital platform to be able to consume all those talks digitally and share it with their teams. And I think that that's probably going to stay around for at least the next couple of years. Are we going to be running hybrid majority moving forward? I don't think so. I think we're probably going to be primarily in person.
I'm a green okay. bracelet. Lick it up. I want all the in person. Funny again that the person who runs the remote team wants all the in person time I can possibly get.
Well, I mean that is funny. So it is called running remote, and a lot of people kind of poke fun at me saying, "Well, so you're running an in person conference about remote work." But here's the thing: everyone needs that time face to face. Just because we're asynchronous teams doesn't mean that we don't interact synchronously. It means that when we do it in a very intensive way. And I'd rather actually speak to you face to face than speak to you through a Zoom call every single day. I'd much rather have one in-person meeting with you per year than do a Zoom call every week, personally.
Yep. That makes sense. There's so many things we could talk about and so many things I want to ask you, but Liam, it's time for us to move to the Lightning Express round. Are you ready?
I'm totally ready. I love this, by the way. This is hilarious. I'm ready to get as many weird questions thrown at me as humanly possible, and I will try to be as honest as possible throughout all of those
answers.
Excellent.
So it's 45 seconds on the clock. I've got all seven questions. Are you ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
All right. What is your favorite moment in the event process?
Oof, when it's done.
Yeah.
When you're over. When it's over.
When it's over. Over. Yeah. Who do you consider your mentor?
Tobias Lütke from Shopify and Peter Thiel, who has a fantastic book called Zero to One.
Ooh. When you were a competitive ice dancer, what was your favorite move?
Platters, because I, at 13 years old, I was always able to look up girls' dresses and it was super fun and I'd pick them up.
Wait, a platter? Is that when you like lift a girl?
Yeah,
like,
so you're lifting like her up above butt? Your head like a platter. Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know that. That's amazing. Okay. Platters. Woo. What do you do every day to stay healthy and sane?
I drink a lot of calamansi water, which is fantastic. And I go for a lunch walk and an evening walk with my wife and daughter.
Oh, if you weren't talking to me right now, what would you be doing?
Working very hard on this event that's going to be running in 5 weeks.
Okay, no, we're going to be done soon. You can get back to work, I swear.
Okay.
You shared with me, you have been on 527 podcasts. What makes this one better than the others?
I think it's undoubtedly you, Carrie, to be completely honest with you. I think you're fantastic. Your bubbly attitude is amazing. And I think that probably the majority of podcasts, unfortunately, take themselves a little too seriously. And I like the ones where people don't take themselves seriously.
Oh, thank you. What is the best way to take care of an event professional?
Proper operational procedures. So having all of your systems in place, what's happening, when is it happening, if you have a rundown that is, you know, within minutes of the actual time that the event is running, you're going to make a conference professional super happy.
Nice. Yay. Congratulations. You made it through the lightning round. Also, there's never a clock, but I'd like to say there, you know, gives it a little higher stakes. So true. I think that's the whole, we talked so much about, I love that we talked about a tech stack, as some people call it. Mm-hmm. I was recently on a podcast and it was two entrepreneurs. They asked both of us like, okay, what's your tech stack? And I was like, what? But I realized that was all the things we talked about, the different systems and platforms that we use to make that work. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they are effectively that's your office, right?
Yes,
so when
yes.
people have a physical office, it's like Asana and Trello and all these tools. That is your physical office.
Yep.
Your Zoom rooms are your boardrooms. It's just inside of remote teams, you can actually get access to them all at the same time if you want to, which is a really magical power of remote and why I think it's far superior to any on-premise organization.
Fabulous. What a wonderful place to end this conversation. Although I do want to keep talking, but I do know you have a job, so I'm going to let you get back to it. Where can people find you, Liam Martin, if they want to connect with you?
So at Liam Remote at most of the socials that exist. Mm-hmm. And at Liam Remote. Yeah, that's usually what I plug in, by the way. TikTok, addicting. Check me out there. You can actually see all of the TikToks that I think I heart, which is, it's a lot of remote work stuff, but it's pretty fun. And
are there any platters happening?
No, I think the algorithm hasn't really figured out that I'm a figure skater. It has figured out that I like remote work and my daughter really likes bunny and cat videos. So there's a lot of that on the TikTok algorithm as well. Yeah.
Yep.
But then outside of that, youtube.com/runningremote, all of our talks are up there for free, as I said before. And that's a really good spot to be able to learn everything that you possibly need to learn about remote work.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you to our audience. What a great gift we just got for the past chunk of an hour. That's amazing. And if you like events, if you love events, even if you loathe events, tell someone about this podcast. Also go on and give us like a really good rating. I'll say bubbly, as Liam said, if you give me a lot of stars. Thank you again, Liam Martin. Runningremote.com is the conference coming up. And remember, whatever you speak about, keep on speaking of events. Bye.
Speaking of Events is sponsored by Ovation, the gold standard for professional presence and speaker development training, helping everyone get prepared, get confident, and get Ovation.